We begin in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the first week of July 2004, this is the Rain Report. If you missed last week's program, Zoning and Municipalities, from writer and attorney Fred Hoppengarten, K1VR, it's still available on rainreport.com, thanks to audio bandwidth underwritten by CQ Communications. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ. Is RF hazardous to your health? It's an ongoing debate, as Dr. Greg Lappin knows. Greg Lappin, N9GL, holds a doctorate in electrical engineering from Northwestern University. Today, he is a registered professional engineer in Illinois, a member of the IEEE Committee on Man and Radiation, and chair of the American Radio Relay League's RF Safety Committee. In his 2004 Dayton Hamvention Forum talk, Dr. Lappin advised us all to be careful about the conclusions derived and statistics published as a result of RF safety research.
I get messages from people all the time who tell me about all the articles there are saying how unsafe RF is. Well, a lot of those articles are not serious articles. We have to be able to distinguish which are which. The popular press obviously will pick up on anything that's sensationalistic just to sell papers or sell advertising time on TV. You have to be able to recognize what's real science and what's something that they just picked up because it sounds good. And if we can impart that to other people, maybe we can take some of their fear away, to say nothing of our own fear. I've met a lot of hams, interestingly, who say, I'm really scared of these radio waves, but I don't want to stop being a ham, so I'll just take my chances. How do we know things? It's very hard to know things. People do research. People spend their entire lives doing research and still don't know. But we're zeroing in on it. We're getting more information all the time. It's been going on for over 30 years, serious research. Some less serious research occurred even before that. But the serious stuff, where people are doing things that we can believe, probably since the 70s. Laboratory research has the advantage that it's very easy to expose things and be very controlled about how much you're exposed. Whereas a disadvantage of laboratory research is the short duration studies. As we all know, even if we've been overexposed to our ham radios or to any other radio source, we don't feel the ill effects. And if people are getting sick from that, they usually take years and years of exposure to get sick. In a laboratory, when they use animals, the animals don't live more than a couple of years. You can't give them the long-term exposures that it might require to cause some of the illnesses we're talking about. So the laboratory is not the best way to discover everything. So we have the other thing, the lifetime type studies, epidemiology. Epidemiology is more of a study of statistics. Look at all the people you can. Try to find out something similar about all those people. And then look at how they got sick or how they died. Then go look at the rest of the population. How many of those people got sick and died from the same things? If the percentages are about the same, then that's what you would expect. If the percentages are very different, then you start asking questions. One of the things that epidemiology is very bad at is the exposure control. You don't know what everyone's been exposed to over their entire life. You have no idea. They try to make guesses, but the guesses may not be good enough. When we hear about studies, we have to look at their quality. The standards institutes, when they put together a standard, they look at everything that's been done. We're talking about thousands and thousands of studies and reports. And they look at each one, and they say, what is the quality of the work that was done? There are many ways that they measure that quality. They can ask, did the investigator use everything that was known at the time to study an effect? For example, there were a series of studies that said that cell phones, 800 and 900 megahertz signals, caused some terrible effects in mice. And since mice are mammals and we're mammals, they were postulating that these same effects would occur in humans. These studies were done some time ago, some of them before the SAR concept, the absorption concept, was even known, but unfortunately some of them after. But what does that tell you? As hams, think about your antennas and how long you've got to make them. And then think about the wavelength of a cell phone signal. Think about the length of a rat or a mouse, about that long. And you ask, would a rat absorb more of that energy than a person? And the answer is obviously yes. The rat is resonant, almost exactly resonant to the wavelength of that energy. So it's a beautiful way to absorb that energy. Would a human absorb as much? Certainly not.
You're listening to a talk by Dr. Greg Lappin, N9GL, about faulty RF safety research. This is the RAIN Report.
You're listening to RainReport.com, the only authorized internet source for RAIN audio.
Good studies define every possible variable, especially in biology, different variables that are occurring. Case in point, there was a study done, again, with cell phones and rats. They wanted to be very good about the exposure that a rat received to its head. They were studying brain tumors. So they took the rat, and they clamped them into a little fixture where the head was inside a waveguide, and the energy was funneled down the waveguide right at the rat's head. So the rat's in this little enclosed waveguide, his head, and he can't move around. Rats don't like that. They really don't like that. In fact, they hate it so much that they get very upset and their blood pressure starts to rise. And one man who did this study and reported blood-brain barrier breakdown of these rats implied that it was the energy that was causing the breakdown. Now, the blood-brain barrier is something that keeps whatever's floating around in your blood out of your brain, because some of it would poison your brain, and that would be a bad thing. Blood-brain barrier is a very important thing. But when he measured the blood-brain barrier breakdown, he had these rats clamped into this device I described. And one of the things we know about blood-brain barrier is it's very sensitive to other changes too, like blood pressure. And if this investigator, who happened to be in Sweden, had bothered to measure the blood pressure of these rats, he would have seen them spike very high. And high spikes in blood pressure are known to open up temporarily the blood-brain barrier. It was just a badly performed study. He didn't look at every variable. He didn't look at blood dynamics that might affect the blood-brain barrier. So he just assumed the RF energy was what did the trick. Now, another thing, because biology is so complicated and there's so many variables and we can't even know them all, that all reputable research in this area should demonstrate that it can be independently replicated. Very often, someone shows something where they find that the blood-brain barrier breaks down. One investigator showed the DNA breakdown during exposure. And then everyone else who tried to exactly copy what they did was not able to replicate the results. Well, that kind of implies that the first guy did something wrong. In one case I was just talking last night about, it was a very problematic case because it counteracted everything we know about the physics of this energy, and that is that RF energy is non-ionizing, as opposed to X-rays, for instance, which are ionizing. Ionizing means you can create ions. You think back to high school. You can take a substance, a compound, break it apart into pieces, and you do that by breaking off electrons. When the pieces are broken apart, you have different chemicals form. Well, if you take a strand of DNA and you knock off some electrons, the DNA is going to break up. And the DNA will reform. The body will make it get back together, but it may not get back together the same way. And one of the mechanisms of the cause of cancer is believed to be just that. DNA breaks, and then when it gets back together, it gets back together as a cancer-causing DNA, cancer being the uncontrolled growth of cells. So if the blueprints of the cell are jumbled up, and the cell suddenly thinks that it should start growing uncontrollably, it's a cancer. This one investigator exposed rats to this cell phone energy, and then he did some little magic with the cells, and he ground them up, and he extracted the DNA, and he measured them. And one of the dangers is he used a new technique that he had invented to measure that. That's dangerous in itself because you don't even trust the technique necessarily. And he came up with this report that said that DNA broke. Well, we know that RF is non-ionizing, so he's just disproven physics. But that's a very scary thing, because if what we understand about physics isn't true, then a lot of the things that we believe about what's safe isn't true. Well, other groups tried to replicate his work, and they were unable to, particularly when they used different techniques for measuring the DNA breaks. So the implication might have been that maybe his technique was breaking the DNA and not the RF. Well, then a group that had some money paid this man to replicate his own study. But they didn't want him replicating it on his own. They had him go to another laboratory, and he could work there, redo his studies, and see if he could get the same results that he got the first time. Well, he didn't, particularly when he was under the watchful eye of another person. So that very scary concept seems to have gone away. because it's unreplicatable. Now, the other thing that happens is that a lot of laboratory effects, the DNA one obviously is a major one, but a lot of the laboratory effects that are measured may not have any effect on public health at all. There's one investigator who said that the calcium channels in cells, every cell has some pumps in their cell walls that will pump calcium out of the cell. And he said that the calcium channels stopped working correctly when exposed to RF. Well, if that's true, and this, again, something that's never been replicated, but if that's true, so what? What does it mean? If your calcium channel doesn't pump as much calcium anymore, does that mean you get sick? Nobody knows. So it's important to realize that when someone reports a laboratory result, it may not have any effect on anybody. It's just a result.
This has been part one of an excerpt from a 2004 Dayton Hamvention presentation by Dr. Greg Lappin, N9GL, a registered professional engineer in Illinois, a member of the IEEE Committee on Man and Radiation, and chair of the American Radio Relay League's RF Safety Committee. We'll hear more from Dr. Lappin about the controversy surrounding RF safety research next time. The Rain Report is copyright 2004 Rain, all rights reserved. I'm Blair Alper, KA9SEQ.